All of the podcasts here at the Sideshow Network are now at the touch of a button on your iPhone and iPad. With the new Sideshow Network app, tune into all your favorite podcasts here at the Sideshow Network. Go to iTunes App Store, search for Sideshow Network, and download our free app to stream all of your favorite Sideshow Network podcasts at any time you want. The top comedians in the world are at your fingertips with the Sideshow Network app for iPhone and iPad.
All right, well, welcome everybody to another episode of Innovation Crush.
Innovation Crush.
I knew you were going to do that.
I always do.
Yeah, you always do.
That's what I'm here for.
But again, I've missed you. I'm glad you're back.
Thanks.
You know, you're looking good and everything. I'm going to borrow that shirt, even though it might be a little tight on me.
A little big because it's so buff.
Yes, I'm sorry. I got it wrong. My name is Chris Denson. To my right is Robert Donez Jr. This is Innovation Crush. And on this show, we kind of talk about the latest and greatest innovations in the marketplace, people and places and things, and, you know, really awesome ideas and awesome projects. We also have a really cool guest co-host with us today by the name of Cooper Bates. Cooper, you want to tell us a little bit about the elevator version? I know you've had like an amazing life. Every time I talk to you, I get jealous. But just give me the abbreviated version so I don't tear up.
You got it. That's quite an introduction, Chris, because I feel that way about your life. But my name is Cooper Bates. I'm sorry I don't have quite the radio voice that you have.
You sound amazing to me.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I founded a company called Hint Mint. It's the original designer breath mint company back in 1997 with a business partner named Harley Cross. I have also was the kind of founder of the idea for TEDx, which is quite interesting. It's a little known fact, actually. I did the very first one. It was called TED LA back in 2007.
I remember that.
And I actually run a TEDx Skid Row now. I co-produced one with a guy named Robert Gupta, who's a violinist for the LA Phil and a TED Fellow. So there you go.
You're a photographer, an adventurer, a man of many, many skills. See, yes. There's no way I can top that. So, and sitting across from me is a gentleman by the name of Adam Chapnick. Did I pronounce that right?
You did.
Oh, great. Oh, yeah. You gave me the eye. I was like, uh-oh.
That was an admirer. You look awesome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I actually ironed this shirt earlier. Thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here. I'm so psyched.
You work for a small company called Indiegogo.
You got it.
What do you do at Indiegogo, and what is Indiegogo?
I have a title that either repels people or interests people. It's evangelist.
Yes, I read that. And I was like, you don't have on a white suit. There's no Bible in one hand, a snake in the other. So I'm like, what happens with an evangelist inside a company called Indiegogo?
Well, you got to visit me later, and I'll put on the suit and I'll bring out the snakes. Not evangelist. I bring the word to the people, you know, about crowdfunding. I travel. I do a lot of talks. I explain to people the promise, the power, the possibilities of crowdfunding. And a lot of people, you know, now it's a big topic. When we started, you know, crowdfunding, nobody knew what the heck that was. And so I had to...
Sounded like one of those made-up terms.
Right. And so, and still, though, the thing that I do now mostly is explain to people that even though it's called crowdfunding, sounds like it's getting free money from people you don't know, which, of course, kind of is. But I really help people understand that that money sometimes is the secondary, even the tertiary benefit of it. It's about like market testing. It's about engagement. It's about, you know, really amplifying a group that's around you, no matter who you are, because we do literally like everything. We have creative stuff, we have causes, we got businesses, we got your mother's dental work, we got, you know, whatever. You got mint companies, whatever. It doesn't matter. But a lot of people, you can get enormous benefit for a whole career doing this crowdfunding thing that really doesn't, it's not so much about the funding because you just spend the money the minute you get it.
Sure.
But you keep the people. They stick with you and they stay real engaged and they become fans and then they become evangelists and they put on the white suits for you, except they've paid you for the right to do it. And that's what's so amazing. And I mean, look, you got to take a grain of salt because look who's talking to you. I mean, I love this. I've been here since almost day one. But I really am excited by like how this is going to change the music industry. Forget it. Over crowdfunded. Always. It's going to be film. It's going to be small business and startups. You get money without having to give up equity in your business. I mean, it's like everywhere. It's going to change everything.
It's awesome.
And this is me doing this. You see it.
You said, no, you're a ball of energy. I'm loving it. Now I want to sign up for something. I don't even have any ideas, but I'm going to make one today. So when did you know, like, obviously Indiegogo was kind of like a pioneer in this space. Yeah, I don't even know.
Yep. First one, baby.
Well, yeah, exactly. I was going to say, I don't know if there was one around before you. What, I mean, aside from being the first, what do you sort of attribute to the success? Because, you know, there's a lot of firsts out there, and then there's a lot of second and thirds that come along and do it better, and then the first is forgotten.
Yeah.
What do you attribute to that, you know, that trajectory, and what was it kind of like, almost even, what was that first beat where you guys go, this is, we got it right?
I mean, first answer is definitely the team. And I think it always, in anything I've ever done, I didn't know it at the time, but it always comes down to the team. It's just, you know, you can have an idea, like you're saying. If you saw the first iteration of Indiegogo, like how it works, it was like, you know, pictures and arrows and, you know, like dollar signs and, a gift box and like people smiling. Right. It made no sense. You know, and if we had just were like, hey, nobody's showing up, we'd be like, forget it. We're packing up and going home.
Right.
But, you know, Dene Ringelmann, Eric Schell, the unsung hero of Indiegogo, mm-hmm. he was one of our three founders, and he built the whole thing himself for like a year and a half. Indiegogo was one dude.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did he crowdfund it?
We did not crowdfund it. We bootstrapped it. I mean, it was right. just, us.
Well, it was a small crowd.
Tiny crowd. Micro crowdfunding. Hey.
Micro TM, crowdfunding.
TM.
You heard it here first, folks.
There it is.
Innovation crush.
No, but I think what we had was vision, right? And it started with Dene. And Dene had this idea that, you know, democratizing access to capital. And that's for everybody. But we really knew that if we could really get people, there's so many different niches that need money and can't get it because there's gatekeepers or there's curators or it's, you know, too many hoops to jump through, whatever. But it would change lives. And our job was getting that vision matched up with people who needed it and then just sticking with it until that happened. And so we went out and our policy on, you know, like events right. early on was yes. That was our policy. You want us to come? Yes, we'll be there.
Right.
You're at like, the Shmooville, Mormon church, sisterhood meetup. You want to tell you? Yes, we'll be there.
Right.
Anything, like anywhere. And we just did everything we could to bring the message of what we were doing to people and listen.
Right.
So it was about getting what people really needed and hearing where they were confused. And so we changed it. And so, for example, we started, we started all or nothing, which is a model of crowdfunding where you set a goal, and if you don't hit your goal by your deadline, you get nothing.
Right.
Right. But, and that's to this day, with something like 1,100 crowdfunding sites, and I think virtually all of them do it that way.
Wow.
But we listened to the people, and everyone was like, look, I don't know how much I can raise. I have no idea. And incidentally, to this day, no one can tell you how much you can raise. I can't, you can tell me I have 20,000 Twitter followers and this many newsletter, blah, blah, blah. I cannot tell you how much you'll raise. Because why? Your idea might suck.
Right.
Right? It doesn't matter who you're reaching if your idea sucks. Or you may be bad at telling them what it is. Anyway, point is, we listen to people and they're like, please let us keep the money we raise somehow. We don't, if we're wrong about our goal. So we figured out a thing called flexible funding. We're like, hit your goal, you can pay us 4%. Miss your goal, pay us 9%. Everyone's like, yay. Now it's more than 80% of people do that to this day.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so
miss your goal, you get 4, but hit it, you pay 9.
Opposite.
Yeah. Opposite. Hit your goal, you only pay us 4%. Miss your goal, you keep your money, but pay us 9%.
I see.
So it's an incentive to hit your goal, but it's not like a total.
Right.
Gun punch. Even
getting that word back from the people, right? I think at least in my mind, there's a lot of misconceptions about the idea of crowdfunding. It's like, it's almost like viral video. Like, if we put it out there, everybody will flock to it. There's a lot of diligence and hard work that still needs to go into it on behalf of the creator. Is there a coaching process that happens in that, or do you find like that is a common hurdle you find with people when they come across the site?
Absolutely. Oh, I mean, I used to, part of my stump speech used to be, there are no elves. And what I said was, the shoemaker in the elf story, it's like the shoemaker has to make shoes for the king and he's got his material he needs and it's due the next morning and the king's gonna kill him unless he gets his shoes, but he sees a guy who needs something and so he gives him some of his shoe material because he's in need and he's a nice shoemaker and he goes to bed and he's like, oh, I'm done, I'm killed in the morning, I won't have the shoes, the king's gonna kill me, and he wakes up and what happened? the elves came and they made his shoes and everything's better. Yay, the elves are here. And I say, you know, in crowdfunding, there are no elves.
Make your own shoes.
Yeah, they're right. There are no elves.
Wow, you can't. He's anti-Good Samaritan.
No.
Anti-elf, actually.
I am totally elfist.
Right.
So, no, but the truth is, of course, in the final analysis, there are elves. Mm. I mean, people do wake up in the morning, come to Indiegogo and be like, what am I going to give money to that I don't know? But you can't bank on that. You can't like put up a page being like, I have an idea for a mink company, and then hope in the morning I've got $150,000 from people who don't know me think that's a good idea. You
right.
know? But what it is, it's amplification. You know, it's a way that you start with whatever you start with, if it's 20 people or 20,000 people,
mm-hmm.
and using what we built, it will amplify whatever message you get to them and move them with. It right. helps them get it to their people and their people's people.
So let's talk about the amplification mechanism for a second. Like, yeah. how does, you know, I put up my page, you know, I got a mint idea and I want yep. to do designer mints.
Yeah.
And be like Cooper. But then how does the Indiegogo platform help me get the word out? Or does that not even happen?
Oh, it does. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it does it with the product, and it does with in several ways. So first of all, the thing I remind people is we've been around the whole time, right? And all we've been doing is trying to figure out how do we make this work better.
Sure.
And so to get boring, you know, there's A/B testing, and anybody who doesn't know what that is, it's, you know, we segment part of our usership and we say, okay, today we're going to see if the button should say donate now or contribute now. And right. so everyone in Pittsburgh is going to see donate now, or everyone in Pittsburgh, every other person who visits is going to see donate right. or contribute. We're going to measure it. Whichever does more of what we want, we throw the other one out and keep it. So Indiegogo is just a full site, full of A/B tested stuff that's
right.
better. It all does what it's supposed to do. So there's that. And that goes all the way through from messaging to the buttons, to what color it is, to what shape it is. Is it the top, bottom, right, left, all that stuff. But it's also, you know, like all the way in the back end, we do things where we convert your visitors to contributors. That's important. But maybe more important is when those people that you send to your campaign page, they end up giving you money because they believe, we help them convert from contributors into sharers. You know, they get these big, happy-looking boxes that say, share on Facebook, share on Twitter.
Right.
And we pre-populate their shares. And we've pre-populated with tested verbiage
right.
that more likely to get people to click and more likely to get people to contribute. And you got all that. But right. then there's also something we have called the go-go factor. And the go-go factor, which I did not name. Please do.
It's fine.
Okay, cool. Thank you. I named nice. It. Then I named it.
I thought you were looking at my boots for a second.
Right, nice. So. Go, right. We got the go-go boots. We got the evangelist suit. We're going out.
Yes.
It's going to be a party. It's happening.
No stone unturned.
Right. And we got mints.
Oh, yeah. We got fresh breath. Cool clothes.
Nothing can stop us. So go-go factor is basically an algorithm that we developed because we now have something like 7,000, 8,000 campaigns live at any given time. So we love to help people, and we always believe that that's a value of ours, is that we have people helping people, humans. We don't curate, we're open, and we don't we don't like send you off to an autoresponder email. We help people and we track that. But as far as being able to help everyone with, like, can you put me on the front page? Obviously, everybody wants it on the front page. Can you put me in the newsletter? Can't put 8,000 people on the front page. So we developed something called the Go-Go Factor, which is an algorithm that measures activity. And it's it measures some things that you can control and some things you can't. You know,
right.
whether you're putting up videos that we suggest, or do you have your perks done, or have you done this, have you done that? But also, is it connecting with your community? Are people visiting, giving money, updates, comments, all that stuff? And people, it's like a Google PageRank.
Sure.
People with the highest algorithm score, Go-Go Factor score, get pushed to the front page in the blog, in the newsletter, and even get help from our PR agencies.
So it's fully automated. You guys don't necessarily like play favorites or like, oh, this one's cool.
No,
like, obviously you can't do that. But
right. I mean, that's part of the philosophy of the company.
Right.
It's not just like, there's two things about it that I'm proud of personally. I mean,
mm-hmm.
And I think I'm speaking for my pals, but it's that, you know, one of the guiding, the fundamentals, like I was talking about before, is democratizing access to capital.
Sure.
So it shouldn't matter if you are cooler than me, or if you are Brad Pitt, or if your goal is $1 million and my goal is $2,000. That shouldn't dictate whether you have access that I don't, we believe.
Right.
So if I, with my goal of whatever, 10 grand, and my, you know, little theater company, if I'm busting my ass and putting out all the stuff, and I've got my people coming, and everybody's done, and I'm over, you know, whatever I am,
right.
and you're at $1 million, but you're only kind of half-assing it, and maybe you have a really cool gadget, I'm going to be on the front page and you're not.
Right.
Or maybe we'll both get on the front page. But everybody has equal access. Yeah. And that's I mean, I love that.
Do you find, like, you know, when you look at celebrities or large entities or, you know, people that have a little bit more marketing power to get the word out on their own versus the mom and pop shop or Robert's idea for the jerk glasses handle where you pull your glasses off from the middle?
Nice.
Was that my idea?
Now it is.
Okay.
What's the vibe there? I mean, what are people saying? Like, is it like, oh, Warner Brothers, of course, they're stealing all the attention away from our thing. Like, is there a little bit of that happens? And how do you guys handle that kind of churn in the
So
process?
You mean in other words, if there's like some famous dude and he does great, do the unknown people doing the same thing that he's doing get all pissed
because
he's taking all the thunder? No. Well, no. So sorry. Let me rephrase that. Do they get pissed? Yes.
Right.
But are they right? No.
Right.
So I love this question actually, because right now this is all over the place, right? Everybody's like, insert celebrity here, Spike Lee, whatever.
Exactly.
He shouldn't crowdfund because he has access to the capital.
Right. He's rich.
He funded himself, right? So one of the things that I point out, and again, all of these sort of like memes that come up, which is like celebrity shouldn't crowdfund, or they're taking away the money from us who need it, right? Those are just a function of people learning how this whole thing works. You know, like most people are like, ooh, I heard a great thing about somebody making $1 million on a website. And that's all they know. That's
right.
Crowdfunding to them. I put up something on a website and now I'm a millionaire. And that is obviously, right?
That's very true.
It sounds awesome. Who wouldn't want to do it, right? Yeah. And then they're like, wait a minute. Spike Lee took the $1 million. Now I can't be a millionaire, right?
Right.
Has nothing to do with what crowdfunding is or how it works. And in fact, let's keep picking on poor Spike, but like, you know, the fact that Spike Lee did this is great for everyone who's crowdfunding. Why? Because virtually everybody who came to his campaign has never been on a crowdfunding site. How do I know that? Because the statistics show that. But also this the whole business isn't even around first base.
Right.
Nobody, you go out on the street, what's crowdfunding? You know, 8 out of 10 people are like, I have no idea what you're talking about, right? In our industries, they know, but nobody knows.
Sure.
So first of all, celebrities bring new crowdfunders where they now have a good experience with the act of crowdfunding. That's good for you, Mr. Little Filmmaker, because they may come and find your film and be like, oh, I'm familiar with crowdfunding. I did this with Spike's movie. Now I'm going to do this with your movie because I like, whatever, horror movies.
Or actually, they're helping kind of push the model and almost like the face of the business.
That's one thing.
And then you've got the machine kind of working behind it.
Totally. But there's a second thing, and it's more fundamental misunderstanding that I always am pointing out, which is, people who get pissed off at people like Spike for doing this are thinking from the way films have been funded literally since whatever, 1902, whatever they've been funded. And it's always been the same way. It's been sort of like crowdfunding. You go to your dentist, your uncle, your mom, your brother, your sister, any idiot that you can get to put money in your movie, right? Because they're never going to get any money back, frankly.
Right.
But until now, that was all investment. Right? So it was like this giant pool of investors, and the investors get equity and they get a percentage of the revenue, blah, 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 blah. Equity, ownership.
Sure.
Now people say, what's Spike doing? He just raised X millions of dollars off of his poor fans who don't get any ownership, and he's going to make all this money. But no. This is not, he didn't even do it on a site that offers ownership, and he didn't trick everybody into giving him money,
right?
Like, oh, I'm going to give you ownership. Nope. I was the fine print.
Just
the
kidding.
Fine print. You got screwed. No. This is not a deficient investment model. This is actually an incredibly turbocharged and groundbreaking, revolutionary retail model. He took his audience, and instead of waiting till he got to the theaters, caressing his fingers and saying, "Gee, I hope the ad campaign worked and people show up, and all of them pay $10 for a ticket." Instead, he invited everybody all the way into the creative process.
Right.
And he said, I'm going to monetize you according to your passion to be involved in this work and your passion to be involved with me. So if you want to pay $10 like you would have at the theater, you can. And I'll still give you one viewing of the movie like you would have gotten at the theater. Great. Casually interested people. But if you are like a Do the Right Thing fan or She's Got to Have It fan, you love me for years and years and years. Guess what? If you made I don't remember his perks, but $1,500, I'm going to have lunch with you.
Right.
And people are like, holy shit, that's amazing. I'm going to have lunch with Spike Lee. It's like the dream come true. Oh, he did. He had a Knicks seat.
No, it was something like that.
He had Knicks seats, right? I think. Anyway, point is,
That's really cool.
Yeah. So, but the point is that that is like an incredibly exciting retail consumer experience for people that helps them engage with things they want to be engaged right. with. So if you think of it this way, then how would you be pissed off that he's like raising money from his family? It's like getting mad when a movie opens to $100 million weekend and they're like, can you believe they made all that money off of their poor fans?
Exactly.
It's terrible.
What is it about our culture today, you know, that makes this work, right? You know, if I think about crowds participating in creative outcome, you know, I go back to Snakes on a Plane, where it's just like, we were like, oh, the script, and all the fans were kind of chiming in on what was going to happen and whether the movie was going to get made or whatever. You know, is it because of technology tools like this laptop, our phones, et cetera, that more people, feel empowered in a sense to make that shift? Like, what do you think is... What primed you guys over the past 6-7 years to make this a success that was already happening in the marketplace?
Well, I mean, crowdfunding is as old as you and me. Well, no, your and my species, much older than you and me. It's, you know, it goes all, and the, you know, we love to talk about the Statue of Liberty was crowdfunded, but way before. I mean, like most public, war memorials.
Free statue, $300,000 base.
Yes, very good.
I watched the talk.
Nice. Oh, okay, there you go.
Shout out to Slava.
Nice. Go Slava, go Slava. That's at GoGo Slava, Twitter. Anyway, but yeah, but like if you go to Europe and you go around, you see all these like war memorials, you'll see funded by subscription or public subscription or something like that. And that just means everybody gave some money so that this war memorial could be in, you know, Trafalgar Square, whatever. Point is, everybody has always, as human beings, wanted to come together and make their voice heard to have something they want happen. That just is not new, right? This is just a way to optimize it, make it happen fast, and give virality the best chance to occur. And virality used to just, you know, mean, you know, I'm going to die of gonorrhea. But now it's...
It still means that for me.
It still means that. Some of us, it's just, yes. Doctor? So... But the short answer is technology absolutely enables the yearning to be a part of something bigger than yourself to happen faster and more easily and to share it. And we're such a social media culture now, which, you know, where we love, it's almost like it's taboo not to share personal details, that this actually is something that feeds into our, it's like our content need for our social media feed in a way. But I think all of that conspires together that it's human nature. It's always been happening. We've built something that makes it happen easily. And it's something that people just yearn to have a part of things they care about and be a part of something bigger than themselves.
The saturation point, is that anywhere in the future for you? Like the amount of projects that come to Indiegogo, the acceleration rate at which projects come to you, is it still... At that rate, is it moving faster? Is it moving slower?
Oh, we're growing. And I'm not worried about how it's not growing. And I think, now, are you talking about saturation in terms of people not wanting to crowdfund?
Yeah.
Like to have campaigns? Absolutely.
We're going
to
run out of money and resources. Like people are going to be, okay, all right, we get it, crowdfunding. I've done paying for 7 films.
No. Yeah. I mean, the big picture answer is no. In fact, I think this is something that addresses a really core need in so many industries that are over-intermediated. So what crowdfunding does in incredible ways is disintermediate. For example, it enables you to distribute without the distributor. It enables you to release without the label. It enables you to publish without a publisher. All of these things. And the amazing thing about it that I observe is that right now, everybody's sort of grasping how it enables you to raise money.
Right.
Notice I didn't say anything about all that other shit that it does, which is more interesting and more revolutionary. And I was like, well, I can raise money. And so what? But when people start grasping, wait a minute, like I'm a musician, let's say, right? Some musicians are understanding, oh, wait a minute. I don't have to shell out all the money for the recording studio and all this stuff and then wait and try and give it to some company that's going to take almost all of my money to do something I don't understand and report to me in a way that I don't understand to give me a couple of pennies on the dollar and maybe give me an audience.
Right.
Instead, I can just, I mean, with music, because the file is so small, I can literally play some of my music on my Indiegogo page now. Like, here's a sample. Want to hear the next album? Give me $10. Want to hear it and write a song? Give me $600. And want to sing backup? What, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And suddenly, You're funding, you're pre-funding your own album. You're involving people in the process. So like I was saying before, they become your word of mouth marketing team for when you launch. But you're also building a fan base that is going to follow you to your next album and your next album and your next album. And then because, again, with music, file is so small, you can literally distribute it over the same site, you know?
But even, but I get that example, right? And you go, a musician, this is perfect, because most artists want to concentrate on the art. They don't want to run a business, per se. They want to be able to make their songs, go in the studio, record, put it out, and have a machine, you know, or a team or an entity of some sort, a label, if you will, do all the work. Right, because if I'm, I just want to write a song. I don't want to have to like, hey, everybody, here I am again. You know, it's like put on a dog and pony show. And a lot of artists, in some cases, are reclusive in that regard.
Yep.
So, you know, how do you combat that? As it sounds like an advantage to someone who's willing to put in that kind of work, but for an artist who wants to be an artist, like, well, how does Indiegogo address that in any way?
I mean, we don't combat it. I mean, that's just the fact. It's like, you know, it's just the fact. You can work on your art. I mean, in the same way that, you know, today, or forget about crowdfunding, 10 years ago, if you wanted to just work on your art and then leave it in your room, you can. Are you going to be a successful musician? No. I mean, you got to do it. I'm sorry, you got to. And if you're bad at it, you're going to do it badly. And if you're good at it, you're going to do it better. Right. Now, if you understand by looking at the guy next to you, and you're like, my friend, the other musician, he's either good at it or not good at it, but tried and did it. Mm-hmm. Or he did it with one of these, there's an emerging sort of sub, you know, like an ecosystem of consultants and, you know, experts who come and they manage your campaign with you. That's going to grow and that's going to specialize. And there's going to be music crowdfunding companies that just take 10% or 50, I don't know, whatever, some percentage of what they raise. And that'll be a great replacement for the label system. I mean, I suspect. Right. But the answer is, yeah, you got to do it or you don't get the benefits of it.
So I guess that almost answers my own question, because I think historically, you go back 8-9 years ago, artists still had to do a lot of legwork if they wanted to get their music to the people. And now this legwork is, in this instance, is digital. Right?
Yeah, but it in fact, it's so much less. I mean, it seems like it's so much more. But if you look at it and really look at, like, let's say it's 1995. What are the chances? Yay, baby. Look at that hairdo on you, Chris. You look awesome.
High top feet. Woo! Nice.
So, but it's 95. You want to get your music out to the people. You have to go through a label. What percentage of just, you know, people who announce themselves to be musicians get a label deal? I don't know the answer, but it's like, is it 10%?
Low.
That's probably high.
Right.
Right? So if you have a 1 in 10 chance of even getting a label deal, then forget about 90% of all musicians, okay? That's 90% of all musicians. Now the 10%, how do they get a label? They got to hustle. They got to go this way. They got to go that way. They got to go meetings. They got to go this. They take shitty deals. They got drop. They get a new deal. And then so how many of them actually have a career? It's like 10% of them. You're down to 1% of all musicians. So the difference is, let's say half of all musicians can do crowdfunding passably well enough to cover the cost of, you know, recording, and I believe it's for 15 grand, let's say. And that's a good recording.
That's a good chunk of money,
But it's a good, that's not a baloney session. That's good. Half of them. And if they do that, that means that enough people have raised their hand to get them the 15 grand. Now, don't forget, crowdfunding is powerful because it also market tests. And sometimes, like I was saying, you may have music nobody likes. And that's good news, too. Like, not to you, maybe, but it's helpful in the long
run. It's good to know, right? Like, no, it is. We all have to adjust along the way.
Right.
It's like a pivot. And whether you're a business or you're a creative. Like,
exactly.
You know.
It's essential to know. And you may have a passion to be, you know, like, do some kind of music that just most people don't get. Let's just say don't get instead of saying it's bad. But, like, you may be passionate that you want to do it. But
it's kind of too late, but that's fine.
Well, but
no, you're right.
You know what I'm saying? So if that's the case, you get this feedback that you can't raise $15,000 from the people closest to you who do know this music, well, you now understand I need to have a career and can do this music. I cannot do this music as a career, most likely. And that saves your life in some ways. It's not a glamorous story to say it saves your life, and I'm not pitching that story when I go around talking about, you know, the key benefit of crowdfunding and Indiegogo. But that really is as useful in every, you know, startup businesses, gadgets, you know, everything as the wild success, because it helps you pivot, like you're saying, if you're able to.
Well, it's like, I mean, so, you know, it's like those hidden gems that pop up. You know, it's like you never know what's going to be a hit, whether a song's on the radio or a business that pops up. I mean, if you look at all these tech companies that are being founded or funded. But I wanted to pivot for a quick second. Mm-hmm. You're obviously very passionate about what, you know, what it is you do. What is your personal brand, right? What is the Adam Chapnick personal brand? What do you bring to the table at Indiegogo? What do you believe in that makes you so passionate about this and to be the evangelist?
I think I'm a double bottom line person, like no matter what I do, and I'm a disruptor. So I get excited when I see that there's something that isn't working for people and I have an idea that will help it work for people. And that's been, I mean, I did that, this company I started before Indiegogo called Distribber. Indiegogo, I see that all over the place. I've been talking about it here. You know, I mean, I love that. But more than that, it's about, you know, when I say double bottom line, I wouldn't do anything if I didn't feel like waking up in the morning is changing people's lives everywhere, you know, right. Or massively. And so, you know, I cry 3-4 times a week just waking up and turning on the computer, because I'm like, look at this stuff that's happening all over the world because of what we did. Like there's women in Malawi who don't have to walk 3 miles to a well. I'm making this up, but you know, like these incredible changes that are entirely shifting generations of lives all over the world, either in causes, and that's, I mean, literally more than I could ever recount in terms of the impact on lives, but also like fundamentally in disintermediating an entire industry, so that, like, just to go back to music, and I'm not even a music guy, we just haven't been talking about it, but if I know that suddenly from now on, you know, a vast percentage of musicians have access to fans and access to a life that matters to them instead of going into like accounting or having to work at an agency because, you know, they wanted to be a musician but couldn't make it happen. That's incredible.
Now, where does that come from, right? Like, you know, it's one thing to, if I'm 37 right now, and if I go and suddenly I turn on the switch, right? That typically doesn't happen. There has to be something for, at least in this case, I feel it, where whether it was how you were brought up or like where does that spirit of disruptiveness and ideation and, you know, come from? And when was it ingrained in you?
I mean, Well, getting all personal on it, I think I would.
Sorry.
No.
Okay.
I mean, just I'm flattered that anyone cares. Thank you, Chris.
It's just me.
I love it. I'm going to give you a hug. So, you know, I think when I was a kid, I was definitely, you know, a problem for everybody. And, you know, I was not the guy who did it the way the teacher wanted. And whatever I did, I just didn't like doing it the way everybody else did it. And, you know, I was removed from a high school, put into another high school. And I was like, it was all that. And so I cringe when everybody's waiting in line somewhere. Like if I see a long line for anything, I look everywhere but on that line to see how can the same thing that everybody's waiting for happen without me waiting on that line.
Right.
And I think it's just part of me is that I can't stand doing what everybody else does. And so when I see like the bulge start to happen, like an oversized line or too many people in one place, I just gravitate to the answer of how can we have this be more efficient and better. And I want to be a part, and there's something about being a part of that answer also that's very satisfying when you have been related to as the problem, I think. It's the solution. You know, be the solution instead of the problem.
It's really interesting. It seems like there's a big opportunity for you to teach a business class at Harvard. But, but seriously, you know, because within the construct of Indiegogo, you've mentioned so many things that you could build on. So, for example, where do good ideas come from? Coaching people, like helping people with that. You know, like everybody has an idea in somewhere. They just can't articulate it, right?
Yep.
And so they'll labor and labor and labor because they don't have the skill set to bring that to forth, where you guys could actually run a camp, for example.
Yeah.
Once they get in there, you could teach people how to market. Like, I don't know, Indiegogo is not a platform that is instructional. I get that. But it seems like that is a, what could be a, an interesting evolution for you guys.
Yeah, well, you're 100% right. And I mean, in some ways, hearing you say it's not a platform that's instructional is almost painful. You're totally right. It's a crowdfunding platform. But we really, really value that, everything you're saying. And we want to be a part of the educational process for every component. And if it's, okay, you have an idea, how do you articulate that in a way that is engaging to people? Mm-hmm. If it's, you know, okay, you have an engaging idea, but you don't know anything about social media. Well, how do you create a social media presence that's engaging or that's profitable for you or that's authentic? Okay, so you have the idea, the social media, but how do you do a crowdfunding campaign? And so we have all of that, and we do have bits and pieces of that, and a lot of that's built into the product, I'll say. You know, when you start a campaign, we automatically feed you, you should look at this, you should try this, have you looked at this? This is our field guide. This is a campaign that's similar to the one that you're describing in your area and in the amount that you're going for. Check this out, learn from this. But we're always building more. I mean, always. And I agree with you.
Which sort of harkens back to Spike Lee's story. Like, people are jealous because he's up in there, right? Crowdfunding when he shouldn't be, according to them. Right?
Yeah.
But you're also probably using his platform to show everybody else. So everything about, I not to belabor that whole Spike Lee thing, but it just reminded me of how there is no competition. There is no bad competition. Honestly, it's all good competition. Yeah. Competition is inherently healthy for everybody. So, and by showing by pointing people in the direction of other platforms that are or programs that are out there, it's competition, right?
Well, to me, it's almost like it's almost like an abundance mentality, right? Yeah. Like there's a fear that Spike Lee is going to suck up all the money, and the opportunity, right? But the truth is, there's abundance in terms of people that care about your craft. If it's, well, I forgot how you phrased it earlier, but if it's not shitty.
Right. Right. I think that's what I said.
Yes, I think so too.
But even that can be saved. Like if
it can be.
Yeah.
I mean, so potentially.
Potentially.
Right, yeah. Right.
So anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the thing to that point about, you know, someone's going to take all my money, it's just every time I hear it, it's like saying, you know, it's like saying when somebody has a big movie opening, it's like, oh, God, you know, the Avengers just made $100 million. Oh, no, there's no more money in the movie business because no one else is going to be able to go to a movie. Now they spent their movie dollar on the Avengers. Right. You know, nobody ever worries that, you know, the consuming public is going to stop wanting to see films because one does really well. Right. And this is what we're talking about.
Well, you can look at that across platforms, too. I mean, it's, you know, there's always, I mean, over the, let's call it the past 10 years, it's been this conversation about, oh, well, you know, web series are going to destroy television and people are going to stop going to movies. And really, like, if you look at the numbers and statistically speaking, viewing is up on all platforms, right? There's just more places to go. And like, you know, before there was ABC, NBC, and CBS, then there became cable. Then there, you know, so it's just, you just had more options. It didn't mean that people stopped. Like, radio didn't go away once, you know, people started watching TV.
Right.
So it's the same thing. I wanted to kind of touch a little bit on some examples. The same talk that I heard Slava mention, the Statue of Liberty. He also brought up a really interesting one, which is like a cat cafe. What are some other interesting projects that you've seen, you know, that are a little bit non-traditional, you know, that are interesting, that have popped up off the platform and seen success?
Oh, my God. You know, there are so many because we don't curate, you know, we believe a lot in crowd anything, crowd funding, crowd blank, is based on the wisdom or the ultimate wisdom of the crowd, right? So what happens is you get a lot of crazy stuff that doesn't work because somebody's like, I have an idea. And the crowd's like, you know, no crickets. And then some people say, I have a crazy idea. And you're like, oh, that's a crazy idea. And suddenly, boom, you know, it's like blows up. The one that I always think about, and I might mangle this, so apologies to the campaign owner, but Some guy in New York, like, is a sculptor, and he was like, I want to make a sculpture of a Tyrannosaurus Rex, but with Christopher Walken's head. Full stop. That's my idea. And he's like, since that's kind of hard to imagine, I'm going to draw this on a napkin, literally on a napkin with a pencil, and that's going to be what I post as my, you know, my campaign picture. And, you know, what's weird is that at our, you know, like I was saying, we have like 7,000, 8,000, I don't know, thousands and thousands of campaigns all at any given week. And somehow someone in our office was like, did you see this weird thing? And it was always like, oh, just another crazy fool, you know, doing something. And next thing you know, it's like on Reddit and it's like all over the place. And I don't remember if he made like a ton of money, but it was definitely thousands of dollars that the guy raised for a Tyrannosaurus Rex Christopher Walken headed sculpture. And while, you know, like, what good does that do in the world? I don't know. I mean, but God bless him. And the thing, the beauty of that to me is that if you had a curator, you know, if you had some kid, 22-year-old kid being like, you're in charge of deciding whether things are worth being on, and here's our goal. Yeah. Of course that wouldn't have been like something you're like, oh, yeah, that's good. That's good. You know, you can't, I mean, it might not have violated a term of use or something, but who would choose that to be on your on your platform, right?
Right.
But it demonstrates that people thought that was fun. People thought it was interesting. They liked that he was doing it. It was weird and it was cool. And they wanted to be a part of something like that. And that can be extrapolated to literally anything.
Yeah. Cooper and I were talking about this earlier, just kind of like in terms of vetting, you know, so individuals like that, right? Like, let's say I went up and did the same thing today and I walk away with the money. Or I promise to give t-shirts to everyone who, you know, donates, and I don't send the t-shirts. Is there any sort of, like, let's call it like an eBay mechanism where you're rated as a user, but really you only get one time, right? Uh-huh. To dupe someone. So what sort of vetting mechanisms do you guys have in place to ensure, like, the quality of the people behind the project?
Yeah. So we have, like, the industry standard, first of all, on fraud analytics. We call it our trusted safety team because it's a nice word. But we have algorithms that flag all kinds of things that can happen that would indicate something might not be right with this campaign. So there's that. But something maybe more powerful is what I've seen being around forever is that this very, very low incidence of, you know, fraudsters like you're describing is attributed to the way crowdfunding has to work. So something that we observe is that, you know, you may have a campaign that's funded by 90% people you don't know. Might be. But people you don't know never fund a $0 campaign. They will not give to you until you get to 20 to 30% of your goal. So what we counsel people in our educational materials, Cooper, is, you know, that we you have to find 20 to 30% of whatever goal amount you set from your first circle, whether that's people you actually know or have worked with or, like, close readers or, you know, people who know that you're you and have some affinity for you. And only then will the strangers start giving you money. Mm. Now, once you blow past your goal and you go, you know, you say you want $50,000 and you're at $350,000, $400,000, $500,000, whatever. Now, suddenly that stranger dollar amount might be 90%.
Right.
But until you're at 20%, nobody gives you money that doesn't know you. So it's... If you're going to be a fraudster, the bottom line is you have to, and you're going to, you know, break into the stranger community, the world, to bilk them out of money. You have to be willing to defraud your mom and your sister and your best friend to get there. Right. And that's a powerful disincentive, and it's very difficult to work around. So luckily for us.
That's awesome.
That's good. I just wanted to close in on that a little bit.
You're going to cancel your plan to fraud
out of here.
He's like, Mom, don't donate. I'm sorry.
Love you, though. You're the music recording artist. You make the CD. You've got all the people that have funded you.
Yeah.
You promised me a CD. I don't get the CD. Write to you guys, Indiegogo, and say, hey, you never sent me my CD?
Of course.
What's your email again, Adam?
I will get, look, hey, anyone listening to this podcast, if they want some feedback or want to get in touch with me, I'm adam@indiegogo.com. They are just, I
there you go,
invite
folks.
It. I love it. But to your question, yeah, I mean, does that happen? It often, you know, what'll happen a lot is that people get delayed in terms of delivery because so many people are new at this, at the delivery and fulfillment right. of stuff. And they didn't realize some of the stuff that it takes to either to make the thing or to organize the shipping or to, and it might just be them, you know, and they're like right. in their garage and they're like labeling and they've lost the right, you know, it's just, there's a lot of logistics right. that amateur, you know, right. fulfillers get into. And so the time that it takes, sometimes people get impatient. What we find though is that and we counsel everybody on this too, as long as you stay in communication with your funders, mm. people are really forgiving. And people often really want to just be involved in the process, mm. good and bad. And sometimes, especially in creative campaigns, well, creative and small business campaigns, we see that you'll set a goal and you have a, you know, something you want to accomplish with that amount, and some disaster happens that makes things different and, oh, it's going to take a lot more time and a lot more money. And often what happens is the same people will give you money again to keep it going and help you out and make it happen. The time you'll run into trouble is when you stop communicating. Then people get pissed. And frankly, right. so would I, right? So they might call us and be like, hey, we haven't heard. And we'll get in touch with the campaigner and say, you really should get in touch with your people. And, nice. And that's how it goes.
Nice.
I'm Fearful Joe. Right. And I have an awesome business idea.
Yes.
And I'm scared that if I put it out there on the world wide webs,
yes.
75 people will go and build this thing before I get $12.
Yes.
How do you protect me as Fearful? Sincerely, Fearful Joe. Yeah.
Dear Fearful Joe. Everything's going to be okay. No. That's a common fear. And way back 20 years ago, I used to manage screenwriters. And one of the biggest things that I would hear, you know, because it takes a long time to write a screenplay, and one of the things they had to do to get money was go around town and pitch the most smarmy business executives with a track record of stealing things mm-hmm. their great idea. And, you know, at the end of the day, now, one answer I give is that at the end of the day, what's going to happen if you don't do this? If you keep your idea and you stay in your room, what is the percentage chance that you will succeed at your idea? It is zero. Now, if you let your idea out into the world and you take a risk that other people are going to see it, there's a percentage chance that someone could theoretically steal it. But the momentum and passion and a plan is a barrier to entry. It's not a barrier to entry in practice, but it's a barrier to entry for other people who would have to come in as a startup. Is there a chance that, you know, Motorola is going to steal your cell phone idea? Yeah, maybe. But again, you have to think in terms of what would it take for somebody to actually see your work, change everything they were doing in their life until they saw that, and start being as passionate and as committed to achieving what you are already in process of doing instead of you, and then beating you at it. Right. It's not a very high percentage chance that it's going to happen. And if it does, I believe the risk of that happening is worth the benefit of putting yourself out there. That's what I say. I don't know if that's a sad
No, it's great. No, it's basically like the chances are slim to none. Like it's possible, but it's not likely.
Well, look, I don't even want to say, you know, maybe the chances are great that someone would steal your idea. I don't know what, you know, Fearful Joe, you didn't tell me your idea. So if, you know, you might have a really great fearful idea. And maybe it's likely. But what I can tell you is it's much more likely that you'll fail if you don't.
Exactly. That's great. Do you guys have any other questions?
One last question. Mm-hmm. Do people thank you? If they have a successful campaign and they do thank you, what's the coolest way that's been expressed to you and your team?
We get lots of thanks all the time at Indiegogo. I mean, people send great emails and then on our team, we share them around, you know, in a team, right. We have a little thing that we do where we share like wonderful things people are saying about it. It's really empowering, obviously, as you can imagine. What's the best way? I mean, you know, I wish I could think of something that is the best. There's a cool thing. I wouldn't say it's even, well, maybe it's not a thanks. There was just this cool thing that I saw the other day, which was at a shop that had funded its opening in San Francisco. One of the things they did was in the artwork on the wall, there was this thing of like fun sort of sheep. It was like one of the picture on the wall, in the mural, and I'm waiting for the, okay. There was some sort of joke opportunity in there.
There's always a sheep joke available.
That's how I feel, right? Yeah. Anyway, the wool on the sheep what the artist had put in all of the names of all of the funders from the Indiegogo campaign, and that's the mural on the wall of the shop forever, you know? And it's down the street from our headquarters. And so we went over, well, I'm in LA, obviously, but the team went over there and had, you know, met the people, and they all took a picture in front of it, and they shared it around. Cool. And that kind of stuff is amazing. And that's like, cool. Just, I was up in Vancouver last month and met the guys from like the Besties Hot Dogs, or Besties Worst. And these were guys who had this great campaign, and you almost start thinking of them like they are actors, like, because they're in this video, and they were actually very funny and awesome. And you walk in, and there they are working behind the, you know, the cash register, and there's this gorgeous little place that's open for business all the time. Like, I just walk in, and there they are. And they're there because of us. You know, and we walk in, and I, of course, start crying, and I go in, and I, you know, hug them. They're like, hey, and we took a picture together, and I just have a whole bunch of those, you know, that's pictures cool. with people who have made their lives. And that's, to me, just seeing it happen is kind of the best thing. That's, maybe that's a little cheesy, but they do thank us. But I don't know that that's any rises yeah. one above another.
That's a beautiful thing. Oh, yeah. And then to that, and this is my last question. Come on, be honest.
Uh-oh.
Somebody comes to Indiegogo with a campaign. It's going to save a million babies in Ethiopia.
Yes.
And it is heart-wrenching.
Yes.
And it comes to the office, and you guys are like, look at this. Everybody's crying. This is the most amazing thing. It gets $1 because it never hits the homepage. Do you guys nudge it a little bit in that case? Or you just got to stay out of it?
What'll happen is, okay, there's the answer. It depends on how we find out about it. Mm-hmm. So if someone comes to us and is like, we have this incredible campaign and it does save us a million babies and it's amazing, this is what's going to happen and this is what we're doing already to make it happen, we will pull out the stops in terms of our personal help to do everything that we know will help them hit their go-go factor to get on the front page.
Right.
Sometimes if you have traction in terms of press that's already embargoed, that's ready for your release, that shows us that you're doing things that we kind of know have a really good chance of the go-go factor bumping you up. So we might loop you in with our press team and say, we're going to help amplify the press you already have. If we saw that same campaign and they didn't come to us, and someone was just like, holy geez, did you see this campaign? It's amazing. It's $1. We would reach out. If everybody was like, oh, we love this so much, we would reach out, find out more, give them some kind of support in terms of helping them have the tools to do what they need to do to get that go-go factor, but we won't put it on the front page.
Interesting. Okay.
We'll empower it to get to the front.
Yeah.
But we won't just pluck it and stick it there.
Right.
I've got one question.
Yeah.
Hey.
Robert Donas Jr., ladies and gentlemen.
I'm back.
How's the bathroom?
Oh, it was good. I've been sitting here the whole time.
Yes.
But, you know. So, you know, this has been great. And, you know, I've actually worked on a couple Indiegogo campaigns. You know, I still feel like I've learned, you know, a lot based off just, you know, company culture and things like that, and I think it's great. You know, since Innovation Crush has about, you know, 90 million listeners, I'm sure people are waiting to, you know, start signing up for Indiegogo and creating their own campaigns. Do you have any suggestions or maybe, like, examples of a really good perk? Because I think a lot of your perks are the incentive for people to kind of start donating and kind of get involved and engage with, you know, the campaigns or projects. So do you have any good or
tips,
you know,
and tricks?
Excellent examples? That'd be great.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, it varies by category for sure. So, you know, what's a good perk in a charity campaign might be different from a good perk in a movie campaign, a startup business, hardware, blah, blah, blah. But there's a couple of things. Okay. Creative. Let's just use that giant swath. If you're in like a creative thing, like, you know, film or music or books, blah, blah, blah. Something I say is experiences sometimes have more mileage than the thing. Obviously, give away your movie when it's done, give away your music when it's done, your book when it's done, all that stuff. But the more you can be creative about how can I include the people that are interested in what I'm doing in the process of what I'm doing, the more money you'll get out of them and the more allegiance you'll get out of them for often a lifetime. So that could mean things like, you know, you can do the guitar solo in the middle 16 bars of this song. You can do, you can write the lyrics to a song. It could be, you know, there's things that are cool, like visiting the set, visiting the soundstage, visiting, having personal connection with people. All of those things kind of aren't the first thing a lot of people think about, because like, what can I give away? There's like a thing I need to give away. Mm-hmm. But these are all more engaging. They often are higher dollar, and they often keep people around forever. And also, back to that point about the people in the garage shipping stuff, all of those things are non-physical. So they're cheaper to deliver often.
Right.
And they're definitely logistically easier.
And probably like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity too.
Yeah. Exactly, right. for the contributor. The, yeah, right, exactly.
Right. It's all about creating like really unique experiences and participation.
Right.
So as you know, the show is entitled Innovation Crush. And we like to hear about good ideas and things like that. But also, I want you to finish a phrase for me. Now that's a real uh-oh this time. Innovation to me is?
Audacity. Is it one word or should I keep going?
Whatever comes to your heart.
Oh, I was going one word. That was a good one, man.
No, audacity is great.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah. Okay, what do I mean? Well, innovation is having the balls to listen to yourself and say, I see something that can be better and fuck it, I'm going to do it. I mean, that's kind of it, you know?
Period. What if you're female?
It's still saying that.
You're still saying
but
that.
Not necessarily,
yeah, it's a figure of speech.
Yeah, right. Oh, I see. I get it.
There is a hermaphrodite show that we're going to do coming up. So, but I want to thank you, Adam, for joining us.
Perfect note.
Exactly.
Speaking of
hermaphrodites,
I try to end all of my appearances with some sort of hermaphrodite. Awesome.
Thank you, hermaphrodites. You just throw the mic down. Like one person stands up. I knew it was you, but no. Thank you very much for joining us. This has like been super insightful. I feel like we could have definitely kept going on. Probably love to bring you back for like a phase two of this.
Can't wait.
Know, if that's
I love this show. You guys are awesome.
Thank you, man. Yeah. I appreciate that. So everyone out there listening, all six of you, this has been another installment of Innovation Crush, and we will talk to you again soon.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.